This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for February 2017. As I'm sure you know, this part of the podcast is really an audio version of the night sky page I write. Just search for night sky Jodrell Bank. That includes little star charts, showing the areas of the sky where, for example, the highlights of the month are. Just, if I can, to say one thing new. Two things, actually. This month, Cambridge University Press are publishing a new book of mine called The Art of Astrophotography, comes out on the 2nd of February, which really takes you all the way through the things you can do as an astrophotographer, just starting with a DSLR or compact camera and tripod. Also, it has a link to a new astronomy digest that I've started writing. There are actually four pages, they're called, up and running now. A couple on refractors, there's another one to come. One on the discovery or the direct detection of gravitational waves to update my book called A Journey Through the Universe, and also one on infrared imaging of the moon and planets, which updates and adds to the two other astronomy books. So my aim of that digest is A, to provide hopefully interesting and informative articles for all amateur astronomers, but also to keep all the readers and purchasers of my three books up to date with any new developments. So let's have a look. First of all, the planets. And in fact, we can actually see quite easily, I think, six this month. Jupiter first. It's lying in Virgo, some 3.5 degrees above its brightest star, which is Spica. At the start of February, it rises at about 0030, but by the end of the month, by about 1045. It'll be due south at an elevation of 34 degrees at about 6 o'clock at the start of the month and 4 o'clock by month's end. The size of Jupiter's disk increases slightly from 39 to 42 arc seconds as February progresses, while the magnitude increases again very slightly from minus 2.1 to minus 2.3. On the 6th of February, Jupiter halts its eastward movement across the heavens and begins to move westwards in retrograde motion for several months. And of course, with a small telescope, you should easily be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the Great Red Spot, and up to four of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Well, Saturn is now a morning object, rising in the southeast at about 0800 UT as the month begins, but by about 0630 UT at its end. It lies right in the southern part of Ophiuchus, so it's quite low, and sadly, over the next year or so, it's getting lower still, down towards the lower part of the ecliptic. So it never really gets that high above the horizon, even when due south. It'll be about 18 degrees at maximum during this apparition. And that means, of course, that the atmosphere, or the dispersion in the atmosphere, affects the image. A star would look like a little spectrum. I've actually just acquired what's called a ZWO atmospheric dispersion corrector, and that uses two contra-rotating prisms to combat the dispersion and hopefully give one a much better image. I used it just the other day when I was imaging Venus. So towards the end of the month, it'll be high enough in the southeast before dawn to make out the beautiful ring system, which at over 26 degrees to the line of sight are as open as they ever become. Well, Mercury, perhaps not its best month, it lies low in the southeast just before dawn, down to the lower left of Saturn. It brightens from minus 0.2 to minus 1.2 magnitudes during the month, and would be best seen about mid-month. But of course, no details would be expected to be seen on its disk, which spans around 5 arc seconds. Well, Mars is easy to find this month, lying in Pisces, up and to the left of Venus. They're actually closest on February the 1st, with a separation of just 5.4 degrees. So, in fact, could both fit in the field of view of some low-power binoculars. By month's end, as Mars continues to move eastwards and Venus begins to fall back towards the western horizon, their separation increases to just over 12 degrees. Its brightness falls slightly from magnitude plus 1.1 to plus 1.3, whilst the angular diameter falls from 5.1 to 4.6 arc seconds. So, of course, you would not expect to see any details in what I like to say is a salmon pink surface. It's certainly not red. Well, you can't have failed to see Venus, I think, in the last few weeks. It's now dominating the western sky, shining virtually at its brightest with a magnitude of minus 4.8. In fact, its close proximity to a crescent moon last month was given a lot of attention in the press. It lies due south mid-afternoon and can even be seen with the unaided eye. After dark, in a very dark location, it can even cast shadows. On the 4th of February, it reaches its highest elevation of about 33 degrees at sunset. During the month, its angular size increases from 31 to 46 arc seconds, but at the same time, the phase, that's the percentage of the disk that's illuminated, reduces from 40% to 18%. And those two effects compensate each other, which is why the brightness stays so constant. Invisible light, no details are seen on its brilliant white surface. But if you image in the ultraviolet, you can pick up some cloud details. In daytime, whilst it's still high in the sky, it can be imaged in the infrared, as the blue light from the sky is filtered out. And one of the pages in this month's Astronomy Digest article on imaging the moon and planets shows how Venus looked on the 5th of January this year. Well, there's one further planet I'd like to mention. It's actually in the highlights on the webpage. It's on February the 26th after sunset. Let's really hope it's clear, because Uranus is exceedingly close to Mars, just 35 arc minutes apart, so easily picked out using a pair of binoculars. You may not have seen it, so here's a very good chance. It's shining at magnitude 5.9, just within what one could see with one's unaided eye under very dark conditions, and it's just down to the lower left of Mars, which has a magnitude of plus 1.3. The turquoise disk has an angular size of just over 3 arc seconds, and that can just be made out using a small telescope. So I do hope you have a chance to see Uranus. So what about the other highlights? Well, the 31st of January to the 5th of February, after sunset, Venus approaches, as I've said, very close to Mars. On the 31st of January and the 1st of February, they will be joined by a thin, waxing crescent moon, on the 31st below and on the 1st above. That should make quite a nice little skyscape. Quite nicely, on the 5th of February, all evening, the first quarter moon occults stars within the Hyades cluster. Looking first to the south-southeast, you'll see the first quarter moon passing in front of the Hyades cluster in Taurus. At about 1842, its dark limb will occult the pair of stars Theta 1 and Theta 2 Tauri, and at 2032 approximately, the magnitude 2.73 star 85 Tauri. Then later, at 2327, it will lie very close to magnitude minus 0.7 star Aldebaran, which is a red giant star that lies roughly halfway between us and the cluster. That'd be a nice thing to be able to look at. On the 11th of February, just before dawn, the full moon is below Regulus in Leo. On the 15th of February, again before dawn, the moon is lying close to Jupiter. And quite nicely, Jupiter lies between the moon to its upper right and Spica, Alpha Virginis, down to its lower left. A nice little grouping there could make quite a nice photograph. On the 21st of February, to end with, Saturn lies close to a waning crescent moon. And again, that's before dawn, and you can see the moon to its upper right and Spica, Alpha Virginis, down to its lower left. What about the heavens that we can see during February? After nightfall, that lovely part of the sky with Taurus, Orion, Canis Major, and Gemini are fairly high up in the southwest. Sirius, the lowest, down to the left of Orion, roughly due south. The three stars of Orion's belt point firstly down to Sirius to the lower left, and up to the right to the Hyades cluster, where the moon, as I will tell you later, will pass through later this month, and then up towards that lovely cluster, open cluster called the Pleiades. If you do find Sirius with binoculars or a small telescope, just scan a little bit below and you should come across a rather sweet little open cluster called M41. The reason I like it is because right at its heart there is a red giant star that contrasts very nicely with the other stars in the cluster. Over to the left of Orion is the bright star Procyon. There's only really one other star really visible in what's called Canis Minor. And then above Canis Minor is Gemini, with the two bright stars Castor above and Pollux below. And Castor's getting up towards the zenith, the heavenly twins, of course. And there's some nice clusters, in fact, down to the lower right of Gemini, which is part of the Milky Way. If you carry on up towards the right, you'll see a bright star called Capella, which is the brightest star in our Riga. And again, there are some nice clusters, M38, M36, and M37, down to the lower part of that lovely constellation. As night moves on, first of all, a rather blank region of sky comes to the south, which contains the constellation of Cancer. And if you look with binoculars, there's a very nice open cluster called M44, or Priscippi, or the Beehive cluster that you see just above its brightest star, which actually isn't terribly bright. And then, of course, Leo is rising over in the southeast. It's a lovely constellation, and Regulus, its brightest star, in fact, is quite close, as we'll see later, to the moon around the 21st of the month. So, quite a lot to look at. I hope you enjoy viewing the heavens this month, either with your eyes or, of course, with binoculars, and then perhaps with a small telescope.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Breverton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the February Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. This month we'll start to see some changes in our evening skies. Bright Venus, which has been dominating in the west for some months, is now beginning its journey back towards the sun. While still visible in the dusk skies, it will be setting as twilight ends around an hour and a half after the sun at the beginning of February, but by the end of the month it will be dropping below the horizon just 30 minutes after sunset. Fainter red Mars is a little above, holding its position well as it moves through the constellation of Pisces. At the end of the month, Mars will pass within 34 arc minutes of faint Uranus, with both visible in the same binocular field of view, and well worth a look, particularly as this also coincides with the new moon on the 27th, although by the time it gets fully dark from our location, the pair will be right on the horizon. On the opposite side of the sky, golden Jupiter is now moving into our evening skies, rising just before midnight at the start of the month and by around 10 p.m. as twilight ends at the end. Orion is now high in the north after dark, with Sirius or Takarua, the brightest star in our nighttime sky, even higher. Below and to the right, and forming a triangle with Sirius and Betelgeuse, is Procyon, the brighter of the two main stars that form the constellation of Canis Minor, Orion's small hunting dog. Procyon is the eighth brightest star in the nighttime sky, and like Sirius, at 9 light-years distant, is one of our sun's nearest neighbours at just 11 light-years away. Also like Sirius, it is in fact a binary system, with a 1.5 solar mass primary and a faint white dwarf companion. Just over a third of the way between Sirius and Procyon in the constellation of Monoceros is M50, a pretty heart-shaped open cluster of stars visible in binoculars. Around a third of the way from Betelgeuse to Procyon is NGC 2244, a rectangular cluster of stars that is embedded in a faint nebula called the Rosette. Whilst the cluster is visible in binoculars and small telescopes, the nebula is more of a challenge and is best seen photographically. Below Canis Minor sit another pair of stars, Castor and Pollux, marking the heads of Gemini the twins. Pollux, the higher and brighter of the two stars, is the 17th brightest star in our night sky. It is about 35 light years away from us, whilst Castor is in fact a sextuple star system located 52 light years from Earth. Nearby to Eta Geminorum, at the foot of the twin of Castor, is the open star cluster M35, covering an area almost the size of the full moon. Under good conditions, it can be seen with the unaided eye as a hazy star, but binoculars or a wide-field telescope will reveal more detail, and they're the best way to view this lovely cluster. Next to Gemini is the faint zodiac constellation of Cancer the Crab. At the centre of Cancer is a lovely open cluster of stars known as M44, Praesepe, the Manger, or the Beehive. At magnitude 3.7, the cluster is visible to the naked eye as a hazy nebula and has been known since ancient times. It was one of the first objects Galileo studied when he turned his telescope to the skies in 1609. Galileo was able to pick out around 40 stars, but today we know that Praesepe contains over 1,000 individual members, with a combined mass of between 500 and 600 times that of our Sun. As one of the closest open star clusters to our solar system, M44 is a great target for binoculars or small telescopes, which will easily reveal a number of individual stars within it. Higher, and to the east of Canis Major, is Puppis, representing the poop deck of the great ship Argo, which we explored last month. Inside Puppis are two lesser-known Messier objects, M46 and M47. Messier 46, also known as NGC 2437, is a rich open cluster at a distance of about 5,500 light-years away. M46 is estimated to contain around 500 stars, of which around 150 are of magnitude 10 to 13. Estimated to be only 300 million years old, this is a young cluster, and a lovely sight in binoculars or a small telescope. Astronomer John Herschel described it in his General Catalogue of Nebulae and Clusters as a remarkable cluster, very bright, very rich, very large, involving a planetary nebula. This planetary nebula, located near the cluster's northern edge, is NGC 2438. A planetary nebula is formed when a low or intermediate mass star comes to the end of its life, ejecting its outer layers into space as a glowing shell of ionized gas. Whilst NGC 2438 appears to lie within the cluster, it is probably just a chance line-of-sight effect, as the radial velocities are quite different. NGC 2438 is estimated to lie somewhat closer than M46, at around 2,900 light-years away. Located around 1 degree west is another open cluster, M47. The two fit easily within one binocular field of view, and are often referred to as sisters. Messier 47, or NGC 2422, has actually been discovered several times. The first was sometime before 1654 by Giovanni Battista Hodierna, and then independently by Charles Messier on February 19, 1771. William Herschel also independently rediscovered it on the 4th of February 1785, and it was included as GC 1594 in John Herschel's General Catalogue of Nebulae and Clusters of Stars, the precursor to Dreyer's new General Catalogue, in 1864. Due to a sign error by Messier, the cluster was considered a lost Messier object for many years, as no cluster could be found at the position of Messier's original coordinates. It wasn't until 1959 that Canadian astronomer T.F. Morris identified that the cluster was in fact NGC 2422 and realised Messier's mistake. M47 lies at a distance of around 1,600 light-years from Earth, with an estimated age of about 78 million years. M47 is described as a coarse, bright cluster containing around 50 stars, scattered over an area around the same size as the full moon in the sky. It is bright enough to be glimpsed with the naked eye under good observing conditions, but best viewed with binoculars or a small telescope. There are a couple of other excellent binocular targets in Puppis, including open cluster NGC 2477, a wonderful rich cluster of over 300 stars, described by American astronomer Robert Burnham as probably the finest of the galactic clusters in Puppis, along with its neighbour NGC 2451. Both located close to the second magnitude star Zeta Puppis. Also known as Neos, this blue supergiant is one of the hottest, most luminous stars visible to the naked eye. It has a bolometric or total luminosity of at least 500,000 times that of the Sun. But with most of its radiation emitted in the ultraviolet, it is visually around 10,000 times brighter. It is also one of the closest stars of its kind to our Sun, at a distance of around 1,080 light-years. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.